Kia ora and welcome to Emerson's Podcast, episode 270. Today is Thursday, November 24, 2011. Happy Thanksgiving to my American friends. It is, of course, just another Thursday here in New Zealand, and tomorrow will be just another Friday because we don't have Thanksgiving here. That's an American holiday, or at least this particular one is. But I am going to be doing a sort of mini Thanksgiving dinner tomorrow, Friday, which is, of course, Thursday in the U.S. But it's going to be kind of a pared-back version. It's just basically to sort of keep alive my American traditions, the things I grew up with and so on, but not going overboard because it is getting on to summer. It's almost officially summer here in New Zealand. I really don't feel like, you know, heating up the house with a big roasted meal. That's what I'm up to. But I'm actually going to talk a little bit more about holidays later on when we get to the comments. Now, today's episode is mostly tying up loose ends about the election because that's on this Saturday, the 26th. And I can't talk about it on Friday after midnight. And that gets a little bit complicated. And I'll talk about that when I get to that subject. But first, this episode is called Not in Service because of two different things. The first was that the podcast was temporarily out of service. And that's because of something. That's all I can say. I don't know. What happened is that on Monday of, not this past week, but the week before, I guess it was, I posted a normal episode, and it uploaded normally. I use this program called FileZilla, which is an FTP software for uploading the podcast to my site. Everything went perfectly normally. And then later in the week, I recorded another episode. That was the one on Thursday, which I tried to upload, and it wouldn't upload. Well, I didn't think much of it at the time because, yes, every once in a while the server is down for whatever reason. I thought, oh, it just must be my dumb luck to get it at that time. So the next day, Friday, we were going to the wedding that day, and I tried again in the morning. Nothing. I tried going through the website. Nothing. So then I tried contacting their customer non-service and got no joy. First, they told me it was my fault every step of the way. First, they said that there was a change in my firewall. There wasn't. Then they said that there was a change to the settings in my FTP software. There wasn't. Basically, they had no idea what was going on. And so then finally, Nigel suggested that I try a different FTP software, which is called, it's on my test bar, it's called CyberDuck. And so I loaded that, and it worked perfectly right away, and I've used it since. So that's my new FTP software, and I have no idea why that worked and why FileZilla suddenly stopped working and why I couldn't access through the website. None of that makes any sense to me, but all I know is that it now works, and so that's, I suppose, what matters. So I was temporarily out of service. Now, my hosting agreement, or the hosting I paid for, I guess is more to the point, doesn't expire until May, I think it is, of next year. And I am going to look around for a new host, partly just because I feel icky about being part of GoDaddy. But they do have outstanding prices, and I may not be able to afford to. So it won't affect anybody else because I'll just redirect my feeds, and you won't even notice a thing. Hopefully. If I even change, I may not. So that's the first one. The other one was I had jury service. And this was last week. On Monday, I was to be there at, I don't even remember when it was, 8:45 or something like that. And I discovered that the main feature of jury service is waiting. Waiting and waiting and waiting. And did I mention waiting? It seemed like that's all I was doing. As it happens, I wasn't selected in the first group for the first trial. They were all shuffled away. But I was in the second group. These are all prospective jurors at this stage. And I was sitting around waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. Then they finally said there was a delay in starting the trial and that we could all go out and come back in 3 hours. I thought, bloody hell. So I did. I went out and I had some lunch. I was actually trying to text Nigel to join me for lunch, but he wasn't getting my texts because I found out that when I upgraded my iPhone to iOS, whatever it is, 4 or 5, I don't know, I lost count, it added that iMessage thing, and it was trying to send texts through iMessage. I had not changed my settings. It changed it for me, and so he wasn't getting any of my texts, and once we worked that out, we reset it back to using text messaging, and it's fine now. But so I just kind of wandered around. I went to what was supposedly the closing down sale for the Borders bookstore in Queen Street, which was probably the biggest bookstore in New Zealand, but certainly the biggest in Auckland. And but it wasn't really a closing down store. With it, it's now owned by a company called Whitcools, which also owns Angus and Robertson in Australia. And what they basically done, the few of the books were from Borders, but most of them were just Whitcools books from wherever, and they just put them in there kind of like a garage sale to sell them off. Which is not to say that they didn't have some decent prices, but it wasn't like, oh, wow, kind of prices, and there wasn't much left. What's open is a fraction of what used to be the store, so it's really actually kind of sad. And I have no idea what's ever going to go in that space because it was such a rabbit's warren. But, yep, that is no more. And I don't know if they're going to be closing any of the other Borders locations. I think they had 4 or 5 in New Zealand, if I remember correctly. One of them is at the Albany Mall, and it's actually not a bad bookstore. And so I'm hoping that one survives. But I don't know. They actually, who knows, they might just rename it Whitcools. But, yeah, so that was what I did on Monday, and I got back there, and we were taken up to, after lunch, we were taken up to the courtroom. And we're sitting there, and then they call the first person up, and she goes and talks to the judge, and she's dismissed because of language. She's Asian. Then the second one called up was also Asian, and she was dismissed because of language. And the third one called up was also Asian, and she was dismissed because of language. The fourth one called up was a Kiwi, an ordinary Kiwi, and he was selected. The next one called up was a man, if I remember correctly, who was South Asian, and he was dismissed for language. The next one was me. And I was selected, so I had to go sit in the jury box. And they finally got through all the others. And then we were told to go off and elect a foreman, so we went in the jury room and we elected a foreman who turned out to be the only one who actually wanted to be there. None of the rest of us did. And so then we went back. Oh, the judge told us to find out if anybody had any conflicts. The trial was supposed to go until Wednesday. And if they had any conflicts or if there were any language issues. And one person did have a conflict on Wednesday, and so they were replaced. Unfortunately, though, that meant that because of the rules, we had to go back out and select a foreman again. And we selected the same person, as you would expect. And so we came back. And then they got underway. And I have to say that the judge was very good about explaining everything that was going on and what we had to do. The prosecution then got up and presented their case and also the points of law that were at issue. The defense got up and presented their case and what their defense in law was. And I thought to myself, do they do this for every trial? Because it's really in-depth explanation of what happens and what we were to do and all those kinds of things. And so then we had a break. I think it was then, or maybe it was after that. At any rate, they had their first witness, and it was the plaintiff actually. And so they were. I actually cannot talk about the case. I'm not allowed to. But basically, it was a dispute between two people that involved an allegation of assault, which in New Zealand is any unwanted touch. But in this case, it was allegedly pushing somebody. And so this went on for a while, and then we took a break, and then we were brought back in and continued on with the testimony. And then the person said something. This is our theory. The person said something they shouldn't have said. We were told to go back to the jury room. They had all the witnesses exit the courtroom so that the judge could talk to the solicitors alone. And so we're sitting there cooling our heels, and then finally we're called back in, and the judge apologized and said that she needed to talk to the solicitors about a point of law, and that she decided that this was about 4:30, I think, that instead of running until around 6:30, as she thought we would to try to catch up, for lost time, we were just going to start again in the morning, so we were all free to go for the day. So we did. So we all left. We all filed out. We were told to be back down in the jury assembly area at, I think it was like 10 a.m. or something. And so we showed up, and there was a bit of a delay, and then they finally said to us that there was another delay in starting the trial for the day, and that we were free to wander around for a couple of hours, I think it was. So we did. We went off and wandered. I went around Queen Street and just, I didn't really do anything, I don't think. Might have gone to get, no, I don't even think I went to get, a, no, I did go and get a coffee at McDonald's so I could use their free Wi-Fi. And so then I headed back in time, and actually on Tuesday, Tuesday, I met Nigel for lunch. That's what I did. And which is fun, because I'd ridden in with him both Monday and Tuesday mornings. And Monday night, after we're done for the day, Nigel and I went out and had dinner in the city, which is something we very seldom do either. And so then I go back in the afternoon, and we're finally brought up to the jury room, and we're sitting there waiting. Then we're brought out, and the judge said that this is, mind you, this is the start of the day on Tuesday, and it's already like 2 p.m., I think. Oh, there's Sonny making her appearance. And so then we, the judge said to us that she was stopping the trial and that we were going to be discharged as a jury, but we weren't to talk about the case specifically with anybody because there would be another trial and another jury and blah, 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 blah. So we were all taken back downstairs, and unfortunately, because the trial wasn't complete, we were put back on the roster to be selected for another trial. However, this is by this point, they were done for the day, and they told us to come back the following morning. I think it was even a bit later. Maybe no, it was actually earlier. It was like 9:45 or something. I was supposed to be there. So we left, and because it was so early, I just went home, and I did a few things around the house trying to catch up on what I'd missed in the first part of the week. And so then the next morning, I went in again with Nigel. He had an early appointment, so we went and we had breakfast together. So we had dinner, lunch, and breakfast together that week, which is fun. Out. And then I went up to the court. I had a couple of hours to kill in the city, and so I just kind of wandered around and finally made it to the court. And then the lady told me that they didn't have a number to contact me, and so they weren't able to tell me that the trial that I was potentially going to be selected for was canceled. And now, I thought this was very strange because they rung me on Friday to tell me to come in on the Monday, the Friday when I was at the wedding that day. So they obviously had a phone number for me at some stage, and they'd emailed me stuff, so they obviously had my email address, and so I couldn't figure out why they said they couldn't contact me. But nevertheless, she said, so you're free to go for the day. Unless you want to come back tomorrow. And I said, well, I'd really rather not. And she said, well, that's fine then. That completes your jury service. This is on Thursday morning. So that was it. And then I went back home and I did some more things. And Friday I started to try to get caught up. And I'm still actually trying to get caught up on some of the disruption. So I actually have a different work project to do. And then my work project this month is bigger than normal. And I actually need to start it next week rather than the week after. This coming week I need to start, but I have to finish this other project first, so it's a lot to get done. And I have to finish my project organizing the house. Uy. So that ended up being not service as well. So, and mind you, I was pleased about that because I'm not a big fan of jury service. It was moderately interesting because, you know, I got to see more about how the criminal trial system works in New Zealand, more or less. I mean, I saw very little of an actual trial because it was aborted several times. But the courtrooms are much smaller than I would have thought. But kudos to the court staff because they were all very informative. They tried to make sure we understood what was going on at all times and what we had to do and so on. And I have absolutely no complaints about them, just about the way it works. What happens is that when they get a list, I suppose, of the trials that are going to start. And then they contact Wellington, which keeps the master voting rules. And then they have to, and then Wellington sends up a list of prospective jurors who live in that court's district or whatever it's called. And then they send out summons, and that's how they do it. And supposedly, once you've either served on a jury or been discharged, you're free for 2 years. You're off the hook for 2 years. However, there's two flaws in the system that I can see. The first is that if you're seated on a jury, regardless of the trial's completed or not, that should be it. You shouldn't have to go back on the roster. It's also true if you're on a one-day trial and it completes, you'll still will probably be put back on the roster for trials later in the week. And I don't think that's right. I think that once you're selected, that should be it. And if they need more jurors, they should summons more jurors for the second half of the week. I don't think it's right to expect people to give up an entire week of their life sitting around waiting in case they might be needed. I just don't think that's fair. And the other thing is that at no time was I ever asked for any identification or to prove who I was, who I said I was. So I could have been anybody. I could have had somebody take my place for all they would have known. And I don't think that's right either. I think they really, really should ask for ID so that, you know, they can make people prove that they're who they say they are. Excuse me 1 minute. No, that's not green tea. It's coffee. I got a bit dry in the throat all of a sudden. So those are a couple flaws, I think, in the system. And while it wasn't a horrible experience, it certainly wasn't a good one. And it's something I would not look forward to repeating anytime soon. But I don't know. We'll see. So those are the things that I was up to. I did mention in passing the wedding. It was a lovely wedding. It was a bright, sunny day. Actually, it was a bit hot, if anything. And the reception was quite nice. The motel unit we stayed in was which was across the road from the reception venue, was really quite nice. This was held in Thames in New Zealand, and there is a street market on Saturdays. So after breakfast, we wandered around there. We got a little hangy thing for out on our deck, and on the way out of town, we saw this workshop where a metal sculptor works. And among other things, he sells these stainless steel sculptures that hang on the wall. They're indoor or outdoor. So we got a couple of those to hang outside. And then came home. And so we were actually home fairly early, I think just past lunchtime by the time we got home. So that was all really quite good. And then we still had, you know, the rest of Saturday and all day Sunday before starting this week. This week or last week? Oh, I don't know. I'm all confused about the date. So that was that. And the main thing in the news is, of course, the elections. Now, I hinted that it's complicated why I'm trying to get this out. This is my last chance to talk about the election before it happens. And the reason is that from midnight on Friday night, our time, until 7 p.m. Saturday when the polls close, there can be no discussion of elections in a way that might be considered trying to influence voters. And it affects social media, among other things. For instance, on my blog, well, they tell you that you shouldn't allow comments on voting day. And the idea is that way nobody can comment and try to influence voters either. I don't have to take down any posts, but I can't call attention to them in any way, like by advertising. And I presume that even posting a completely unrelated post, like a picture of a flower, would potentially be drawing eyes to my blog. So I'm not going to blog at all from midnight Friday until 7 p.m. Saturday. But I'm not going to switch off comments altogether because I thought, if you do that, then that means that if somebody wants to leave a comment, they're going to have to remember to come back. And really, how many of us do that? So instead, I'm just going to turn on moderation for all posts. And I'm going to do that on the podcast side as well, because I've talked about the election. And that means that if you go to leave a comment between midnight Friday, actually probably a bit earlier than that, because I hope to be in bed by midnight on Friday, if you try to leave a comment, it will go into the moderation queue. And I won't approve any of them until after 7 p.m. on Saturday. It doesn't mean that your comment won't appear. It just means that it will be held in the queue until after the polls close so that I can comply with the election law. Now, it is a bit – case law is not clear on this subject because the social media thing and actually the internet in general is still a relatively new phenomenon as it relates to elections. And they're still applying the old law to the new paradigm, if you will. So it's not entirely clear that any of these things are really, truly published in New Zealand, because they're all hosted in the United States. My blog is on Blogger, which is part of Google in the U.S., and my podcast site is maintained on servers in the U.S. I happen to be in New Zealand, however, so I would be subject to the law, even if the things I publish are not, if you're following this at all. So because it's so confusing and because it's so unclear what the rules are, I think it's better to err on the side of caution. And that's why I'm turning on the moderation feature for my sites, not for too political, because I really haven't talked about the New Zealand elections there in any great detail. Well, maybe I will. I don't know. We'll see. But that's how I'm going to comply. And as I said, I'm not going to post to any of the sites between midnight Friday and 7 a.m. Sunday, 7 p.m. Saturday. And that's why I'm doing this today. And the other reason, of course, is that my American friends are going to be involved in their holiday weekend, and they might not – some of them may be able to download this before they go and to have something to listen to on planes or trains or whatever. And so I'm trying to be helpful. But, of course, all of that is preface to talking about the election, which is, of course, Saturday. And there are two completely different elections going on at the same time, as you know. The first is the referendum on the on our election system, electoral system, and the other is the normal general election. I'll do the referendum first. I've talked about how I'm voting to keep MMP. That's no secret. It's nothing new. and I've talked about it a lot on my blog. But I've also on my blog, I've been doing a series of posts about the various alternatives to MMP and why they're not as good. And I'm going to do a wrap-up post as well about all of them. And that should be in the show notes, hopefully by the time I post this or soon after. And so if you want to know more about what I think about these systems, you can either go over to my blog, which is amrens.blogspot.com, or wait for that post and just follow, click the link through to the summary post, which will have links to all of the individual ones. That's if you're really interested in these alternatives. But basically, the bottom line is that none of them are as good as MMP for our parliament, because only MMP guarantees full proportionality, which means that the percentage of the votes that are cast directly influence the makeup of the new parliament, which is sort of now getting on to the second part of the... Oh, but the second part of the referendum is irrespective of whether we want MMP or not, what would we choose to replace it? And that one is it's a more fraught question. There are some people on the left who are saying that we should vote for first past the post, the horrible old system we used to have and the one that's used most of the U.S., because it would never win against MMP. And so if there is a second referendum, we want it to be against an easy beat. And I'm a bit more dubious about that, because there's a lot of power and money that wants first past the post on the right. And people may go with something that they're familiar with rather than even sticking with MMP were that to happen. And I'm really dubious about that. Polls are showing that MMP is expected to win retention, or whatever you want to call it, and then it will trigger an automatic review to look for ways to improve it. If MMP does not win, it may face another referendum against the highest polling alternative. But that's up to Parliament. They may decide not to bother with the second referendum. I don't know. But I'd really rather not go down that road. So anyway, all of this, of course, is about how we elect our Parliament. And the election for Parliament has two components. One is the person I want to represent me in my electorate. And I already said I'm going to vote for the Labour candidate. And then that's in a first-past-the-post election. But the larger vote, the more important of the two votes, is the party vote. And that's the party that I want to form government. And I'm still, at this moment, equivocating on how I'm going to vote. Before I said I was going to give two ticks Labour, which means vote for the Labour candidate in this electorate and give them my party vote. I'm not so sure. I might vote Greens for my party vote. It's a long, involved story about why I have been so torn about this, although I've discussed it a little bit earlier. It looks almost certain that the Conservative New Zealand National Party will be the biggest party in the new parliament. It's pretty much a certainty. The polls have consistently shown them polling above 50-odd percent, most of them have, and it's unlikely that they're suddenly going to drop below. They're going to drop far enough down that Labour will be the largest party. That's highly improbable. It would be virtually unprecedented to see that much of a change, that much of a difference between what the polls said and what the electorate actually did. Now, of course, there are a lot of factors that influence that. Turnout is, of course, the biggest of those. And there's at this point, not a whole lot of evidence that Labour voters are fired up enough to make the effort to go to the polls. National people always do. The right always votes, well, almost always. And so, I don't know. But on the other hand, the polls have been showing that National is so far out in front that the Conservatives could get complacent and just not bother to vote, and that could give the center-left an opportunity. But, so as I said, I fully expect that the National Party will have the largest number of seats in the new parliament. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to have enough seats to form government. And I am kind of thinking they probably won't, at least not to govern alone, that they're going to have an agreement or support from somebody. Now, I've said before that it looks like the ACT Party candidate is going to lose in the Epsom electorate, and if that happens, they'll be out of parliament. So that only leaves this guy named Peter Dunn, who is in an electorate near Wellington, who is also in some trouble, but I think he's probably going to win, but he's in some trouble. And then he would have to look for support from other parties. Now, if he only needs a few seats, he could probably turn to the Māori Party, which will probably have four seats, and form government with them. But and this is why I haven't decided I'm definitely voting for the Greens. They have said that they theoretically could support National on as long as they agree to certain policy bottom lines, like not selling state-owned assets, for instance. They said it was highly unlikely that they would be able to form an agreement with National, and they yesterday said it's extremely unlikely, which helps a little bit, but I'm still just there's a little niggling doubt in my mind because I don't want to help elect a National Party government, and I'm afraid that if I vote for the Greens, that's what I could end up doing. So I don't know, but Labor could be headed for its biggest electoral defeat ever. It, or at least a very bad one. And if the polls actually end up being true, that's what would happen. However, as I said, polls always tighten up at the actual election, and it's unlikely that Labor is going to do as badly as the polls are showing that they're going to do. But still, they could lose 10 seats easily in the new parliament, and the Greens could end up with 15 seats, potentially. It's really difficult to tell because so much hinges on just a few percentage points and whether or not any other parties cross that 5% threshold. One of those is a conservative party called New Zealand First, which is headed by this guy named Winston Peters. And he's polling very near that 5% cutoff. If he crosses the 5% line, he said that he will not support either Labor or National. But he says lots of things that he ends up changing his mind about because in 2005, he said he wasn't interested in the baubles of power, but then he accepted the role of foreign minister outside of cabinet and gave his support to Labor. So there's no telling what would happen. My hunch is that National will probably be forming the next government, that it will have to have a coalition to do it. But I'm not positive of that. I'm not willing to predict that. All I'm willing to predict is that National will be the largest party in the new parliament because I don't see how the polls could be that far off to change that. So I'm fully confident in predicting that. But as to who forms government, I'm reasonably sure that National will form the next government, but it's certainly not a dead certainty. And I will talk about all of that next week after the election's over and have a chance to digest what's going on. I won't post right away because some people probably won't get this episode until early next week. Because of the holiday in the U.S. So I will go over that later. Now, we have a family event on Saturday, so we're going to vote before we go, and then we should get back just about in time for the, actually probably before the returns start coming in. So nothing will be, we won't hear anything at 7 o'clock, I can assure you that. So we'll be watching that from 7 p.m. our time on Saturday. I actually think that that's streaming over the internet on TVNZ, which tvnz.co.nz, and possibly on tv3.co.nz. I don't know if they're going to be streaming or not. But you may be able to tune in if you're at all interested in what's going on in the elections. But as I said, there probably won't be anything to report at 7 p.m. And that, I think, is going to do it for that topic, and I'm going to now go on to the comments. And yeah, I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to do the phone messages first. And the first one is from my buddy Bank.
Hi, Arthur. It's Bank from Santa Fe here. I've been enjoying your podcasts and your election coverage, and I guess I'm looking forward to hearing your post-election coverage too. So I have been saving up a few things that I was going to call and chat about for when I had a moment, and now I finally do. So you had talked about, is it fair that the All Blacks get to do a haka? Well, that's an interesting question. I have to say, I have a strong sentimental attachment to the haka and would be grieved to see it go. I think it's fair so long as other teams are allowed to have comparable traditions, as does seem to be the case since, and as you mentioned, some of the other Pacific Island teams do their versions of the haka. And so long as the opposing teams don't find it offensive. And I don't think they do, as far as I can tell. It certainly doesn't seem to be something that gets objected to. And I think I have heard members of other national rugby teams, you know, expressing, I don't know, excitement at getting to be the recipients of the haka, as being a rite of passage in rugby playing. So if that's the case though, with those two things, I think it's okay. So that's my thought.
Okay, it's me again. I decided what I'm going to start doing is interrupting calls to talk about the point as it's made rather than waiting till the very end. Because I think it makes it easier to follow the conversation. So first of all, thank you for the call, Bank. I suppose I should say that up front. But I completely agree with you. And it's not just that the Pacific Island nations have their own versions of haka. It's also that other countries sometimes do their own response or reply or what have you. And there's nothing wrong with that as long as that's what they're intending to do. If somebody goes onto a marae, very often they are asked to sing. It depends on the specific iwi. Each iwi is a little bit different. But it could very well be that that the guest will be asked to sing a song. And sometimes that catches foreigners off guard. They have to suddenly think of something that's representative of their culture or whatever. But the same thing kind of is sort of true with haka as well. There's nothing wrong with having a specific response that is relevant to the country. It doesn't have to be a haka necessarily. And I've talked before about how at one Aussie test match, the crowd sang Waltzing Matilda. Well, that's a bit OTT maybe. But I mean, when it comes right down to it, there's nothing wrong with it. So anyway, let's go on with Bank's call.
And then you've been talking about holidays a lot lately, and I have a few thoughts. I certainly found your comments and Brother Sinaitis's comments interesting, and I guess I do want to take issue with a couple of things that got said. One is regarding trick-or-treating being on the way out. Well, here in Santa Fe, amongst six-year-olds I know, it's alive and well, let me tell you. Our neighborhood is crawling with trick-or-treaters on Halloween, and we typically get 200 to 300 at our house.
Wait, what?
We typically get 200 to 300 at our house.
So. Holy crap.
Yeah. I wish it was a little calmer than that, frankly. And then the other thing is talking about holidays being transferred out of their natural season and how odd that is, and can they survive it? It is odd when a holiday you're familiar with is celebrated at a different time of year. But I think I detect a hemispheric bias with you and Brother Sinaitis in assuming that if a holiday is celebrated in both hemispheres, then it's the Northern Hemisphere version that is the natural form of it. I think it goes both ways. So I think if you grew up with Easter as a celebration of the beginning of the planting season, then it's going to be very anomalous to be marking it at the end of the harvest. But if you grew up with Easter as the last weekend to go tramping before the winter sets in and an occasion to eat the lambs that you won't be wintering over, then it feels very strange to be celebrating it when there's still snow on the mountains and, you know, you're not at the end of the summer. So I think all the associations that we have with holidays, whatever you grew up with, whatever season you grew up associating those with, will make sense to you and others won't. When I first came to the U.S. and celebrated Christmas and winter, I found it appallingly depressing and un-Christmas-like because it was dark and cold and you couldn't go outside, and how could this possibly be a festive occasion? So anyway, there you have my thoughts on holidays.
Okay, me again. I actually completely agree with you, Bank, and I felt very similar when I came to New Zealand and felt a summer Christmas because I was used to what you're talking about, cold, actually worse than that, because not only was it dark and cold, it was also snowy and icy and sometimes bitterly cold. And so having Christmas in summer just seemed wrong. And I absolutely agree with you that it really does matter what you experience growing up. And there are people in the U.S. who have only known warm weather Christmases, and for them, the idea of a cold, snowy, icy Christmas is equally bizarre and foreign. So it does completely depend on what you grew up with. some of the holidays have a Northern Hemisphere bias because that's where they originated, you know, with the Europeans primarily, and then they spread around the world. But it's kind of irrelevant in a sense because, as you say, people grow up with things in different seasons and so on. Nevertheless, I think it's pretty common that the Christmas cards you see in New Zealand and even a lot of the displays in stores all feature snow and reindeer and all the traditional Northern Hemisphere trappings. And I always thought that was a bit odd that there should be like palm trees or something instead. I don't know. Or in our case, probably a silver fern tree or I don't know. But I know. I just want to say I agree with you. Now let's go on to the rest of the call.
And then finally, the election. Well, so I voted last week because, of course, I have to vote early being overseas. And last time I checked on the progress of my ballot, it's in Baltimore, which is a little strange because I live in New Mexico and I posted it to Los Angeles, so I don't quite know what it's doing there. But I have high hopes it will eventually make it to one of the consulates and get counted. And so I've been in the funny position of following the election news in New Zealand, but with it being too late for me to change my mind, which is always slightly, I don't know, it always makes me a little nervous that what if I hear something that makes me wish I hadn't voted as I had. But so far, nothing has changed my mind. Despite the furore over the teapot tapes, nothing in that saga has seemed to be of sufficient substance to move my position at all. So that's about it. I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts perhaps before the election and certainly looking forward to afterwards. And cheers for now. Okay, thanks.
Well, thanks for that, Bank. And everyone do let me know if it was helpful to break up the call because I got a little bit silly and I'm sure Bank will forgive me for that. But I just thought it might be more useful for me to comment on things that are said as they're said rather than waiting till the very end. But if you hate it, let me know and I won't do it again. The teapot tapes that Bank mentioned, it was a mini, what's the word I'm looking for, furore that happened here, because John Key, the Prime Minister and leader of the Conservative National Party, went and had a cup of tea with John Banks, the ACT Party candidate, in Epsom. It was meant to be, it was a publicity stunt, it was a media event, all out in public with lots of cameras and all that. It was meant to be an implicit endorsement of John Banks to try to get national voters to give their electorate vote to Banks, to get ACT back in Parliament, and to give their party vote to national. John Key has actually been very equivocal, saying that if he lives in Epsom and he's not voting for John Banks, he's going to vote for the National Party candidate, Neil Goldsmith, because as leader of the National Party, he has to vote for his candidate. So that's sending really mixed messages to his people. Be that as it may, this was in a cafe in the Epsom electorate. It was completely public. There was cameras everywhere. It's now been revealed that there were journalists, including camera crews, standing close enough to touch the prime minister. And but one cameraman left the wireless recording device sitting on the table. He wasn't able to retrieve it. He claims that he didn't realize that it was active and actually recording on his equipment. He still maintains that, and without evidence to the contrary, we have to take him at his word. However, the prime minister, the cameraman gave he's a freelance cameraman, not working for anybody in particular, but he offered the tape to the Herald on Sunday newspaper, which is the Sunday version of the New Zealand Herald. They declined to publish it after they asked the prime minister specifically for permission, and he declined. He refused the permission. And in New Zealand, it's illegal to record somebody's conversation without one of the parties being aware that it's being recorded. So, like, if I wanted to go out and wire myself and record the conversation, it would be legal because I'm a party to the conversation and I know that it's happening. But you can't record the conversation of two other people without one of them knowing it. And they didn't know it was being recorded. Apparently, nobody knew it was being recorded. However, it is naive to think that it couldn't be recorded because there were journalists within earshot as well as other patrons in the cafe. So there's you cannot claim in such a huge public place at a media stunt that you were able to have a private conversation. And apparently they said some unpleasant things. They talked about Don Brash, the leader of the ACT party, how Banks was talking about how they were going to replace him after the election. And they were saying some unpleasant things about the voters who support the New Zealand First Party because they tend to be elderly. One of them apparently said that they're all going to die soon anyway, that they're going to die off. And I doubt very much that there's anything earth-shattering in the recording. It's probably just embarrassing, and that's it. Wouldn't change anybody's vote, I don't believe. But the actions of the Prime Minister are despicable. What he did is, not only did he refuse permission, but he called the police to investigate the illegal taping of this conversation, and he referred to it as being News of the World-style tabloid gutter tactics. Well, it's nothing of the kind. And he's being extremely precious about this whole thing. It's just because he doesn't want to be embarrassed, and he also hates it when anybody stands up to him. And when he, you know, isn't taken as just some sort of celebrity god or something. So the police called in, and they yesterday, well, backing up a bit, the cameraman went to court to try to get a judgment that it was not a private conversation, therefore the recording was illegal and it could be published. Yesterday, and this is why I didn't record until today, yesterday, about 2:30 or so, the judge finally ruled that it wasn't private, but it wasn't public, essentially, because she said she couldn't make a ruling, and she also didn't want to prejudice the police investigation. Which, I mean, it's getting it all mixed up. The judges are supposed to determine what the boundaries of the law are, and the police are meant to enforce it. And of course, the police also investigate crimes in New Zealand. The prosecution and the enforcement are the same entity. So it's a bit weird in that sense. But nevertheless, the judge should have ruled on this. The judge should have said whether it was private or not, because that would have determined everything else. So the police are still investigating, and they executed search warrants at four different media outlets yesterday. And I think that's even worse, because what it does is it sets this dangerous precedent that if a future prime minister feels embarrassed about something or doesn't like something in the news media, he can intimidate them by calling in the police, who will then go and search the for whatever it is they're searching for. I don't know exactly, because what are they going to have? A memo that says, oh, we knew this was being recorded. I mean, is that what they expect to find? Well, they're not going to, because it doesn't exist. But so the whole thing stinks to high heaven, and it is going to come out ultimately. It will either be published offshore in some other country before the election, which would be my bet, or it will be a judge will order that it be released after the election. In either case, it will, in the fullness of time, it will be known to the public. But I think the issue here is that even though I fully admit and fully declare that it would not change anybody's vote, or hardly anybody's vote, that the public has an absolute right to know what these two people were talking about when they were talking about how they're going to govern after the election, so if the voters should give them that opportunity. And I just think it's dead wrong that they shouldn't, that the voters are forbidden to know what was said. Because, as I said, it was in no manner, shape, or form a private conversation, cannot be construed as such. And the Prime Minister's behavior around this whole thing has been absolutely disgusting. At one point, he not only did he compare it to tabloid stuff, and he has attacked the New Zealand Herald, which is probably the most pro-National Party media outlet in the entire country, and he's taking on the Herald. Not only did he do that, but then a few days later, he compared it to a celebrity couple who are recorded talking about their son who ends up committing suicide a couple days later. It is in no manner, shape, or form even remotely comparable to that scenario. You're talking about the Prime Minister of New Zealand and a potential MP who could hold the balance of power and who could direct the entire direction of the next government. There's no way that they have a right to privacy about that when it's done in a public place at a media event. But as I said, it would not have changed anybody's votes anyway. It's all got to do with the principle of the thing. And of course, I'm that sort of person. I get upset about the principles of things as much as the details. But I do have a couple of written comments. George in Atlanta commented, just listened to your last episode. Thanks for the All Blacks Haka explanation. I may have a follow-up question or two. Thank you, George. And you should check out his audio booths. He's been doing some for that NADPOSMO or whatever it's called. Cocoa Puffs, as I call it. And I did one about his sister, which I found particularly moving. And so do check him out. It's audioboot.fm. And I don't remember what his username is on audio booths. Probably George in Atlanta. I'm not sure. Actually, what you can do is go to audioboo.fm and look for the audio booths that are tagged Pride 48, one word. And you can get to all of them there because they're all, there's several people doing it and they're all really interesting, each in their own way. Roger commented as well, Roger Green, sorry. Not just any old Roger. Roger Green commented and he said, Halloween in Albany this year was actually quite active. A lot of high school and maybe even college students came to our door. The pace of netball reminds me of girls' basketball when I was growing up. Girls could only dribble twice and then had to pass the ball. The game now is more like the boys' game. Thank you, Roger. Well, you're the second person who had an active Halloween. And actually, someone else told me via Twitter, I think it was, that they had had an active Halloween as well where they lived. Somebody else said they didn't. So who knows? I actually don't know a whole lot about girls' basketball. I just remember that there was girls' basketball, but I don't think I ever went to a game or anything, so I have nothing to compare it to. I'm not a fan of netball. I'm not going to lie. But I think part of that is they don't do themselves any favors, because when the sports news reports on them, they talk about them by team name. I have no idea who they are or where they are, so it doesn't mean anything to me, and I don't really care who wins any of the matches. But I know the name of the rugby teams because they talk about like the Auckland Blues, for instance, or the Waikato Chiefs. So I know where they're from, and I know who I want to win and who I don't want to win, sort of vicariously, because I don't really care that much. But with netball, because they don't do that, they just say, I don't know, I don't even know any of the names of the teams, the Northern Mystics or something like that. Northern what? Is it Northland or is it North? What is it? I don't know. I think that that's a huge drawback in getting broader support for the game, because we don't know who they are. Obviously the real fans do, but they need to, I would think they would want to grow the game. And speaking of growing the game, the Argentinian Pumas were officially welcomed to what used to be called the Tri-Nations competition, which is now Argentina, New Zealand, South Africa, and Australia. In the international rugby competition. And the first match is between Argentina and South Africa, I think it is, in August. So you may see that on your local international sports channels, such as ESPN or similar. And I think that is it for the written comments. I'm just going to go back to the main part on the site. While I'm doing that, I wanted to mention that I received an email from a relatively new listener. I won't mention names because I didn't ask permission. Who is looking to move to New Zealand and was wanting access to some of my older episodes. And I went, oops, because I realized I'd never finished restoring access to all my old episodes. You may remember that when I upgraded my site, the WordPress, which is what it runs on, or PodPress or something or other, it disconnected all of those old files, and I had to go back through and manually reconnect them. And I just somehow forgot to finish that job. And so I went through, I spent a couple hours that night and just got them all done. So as far as I know, all of the audio files are now connected back on the posts that they refer to. So if you are interested in any of the old episodes, all the way back to episode one, you should be able to get them now. I'm not entirely positive that that they are fully available. I don't know. No, I'm pretty sure they are. But if you find one that's not, do let me know. But related to that, because he's interested in moving to New Zealand, he actually gave me an idea. And that is that I am going to go back and revisit the two episodes I did about moving to New Zealand with new information. And he also kindly provided me with some questions. So if you are a relatively new listener or even a long-time listener and you're curious about moving to New Zealand, what it's like, what you'd have to know about, and so on, send me an email, arthur@amarinspodcast.com, or you can leave a comment to this episode, or you can ring the voicemail line on 206-666-5172, and that, of course, is all at the end and on the website, and give me questions, and I will try to address them. But I just thought, you know, it's been, I think, about 4 years since I did those episodes, and things have changed, and it might be a good time to do an update, and also it's a nice way to move beyond the elections. So the next episode, obviously, will be a wrap-up about the elections. And then after that, will probably be that moving to New Zealand revisited episode. So you've got time to get me questions if you want to. That is it for today. That is it for this week. That is it for this election. I will be back sometime next week with a wrap-up of the election. So look forward to that. And then after that, I will be doing the Moving to New Zealand Revisited. So if you have any questions, let me know. Talk to you soon. Have a great weekend. And my American friends, have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Bye.
You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Amarins Podcast at amarinspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at arthur@amarinspodcast.com, or you can ring my U.S. comment line on 206-666-5172. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.